shorts and bag.
That's a nasty looking finger, lady.
You got the bait?
What? No.
Hey, I got your fertilizer.
We made you.
Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar. I'm hosting this week. I'm here with Jack Estabrook.
How can we possibly hope to win against the trout?
And Cody Wolf.
We all know what we have to do, so let's do it.
Nobody did the line I thought they were going to do. There was a line from the sheriff. I don't know what that guy really
deputy?
Was. That
deputy?
Well, they alternately...
The angry cop.
The angry cop. Yeah. There was a line from the angry cop that I thought for sure was going to be the bull quote.
Every time he came up, I just thought of the, what's his name, Pepper or whatever from the Bond movies. From Live and Let Die.
I know what you mean. That guy, that guy who showed up in two Bond movies, right?
That crazy sheriff guy.
Sheriff
Pepper, yeah.
We're really off track here already, but why did that guy come back in his second movie?
Because Tom Mankiewicz wrote both film scripts.
And
he was a character that Tom Mankiewicz created. Sorry, I'll lean
this,
in.
This character is so brilliant, I need to...
He had such an indelible mark on audiences that they thought they needed to bring him back in Thailand to randomly bump into James Bond again.
Like, why? Yeah, that
so
was
could do that corkscrew jump.
Yeah. All right, our movie this week, 1999's Chill Factor.
Chill Factor.
And I think even before we get into it, what I kind of loved about this movie, and I'm giving a preview of my If It's So Bad It's Good, is this movie is, it's so 90s, and it's so of a moment. Like, you can tell that this movie went into pre-production. They were, you know, casting it and doing that in 1996 because there's no other way. Skeet Ulrich's name is above a title.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Scream must have been in like its second weekend in theaters and they were like, that guy. Yeah. You know, I mean, because if they'd waited another month, they would have been like, well, hold on. They would have thought about it more.
We can't get Johnny Depp. Let's get Skeet Ulrich.
Skeet Ulrich. And then Cuba Gooding Jr., who, you know, at that point was coming off of Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
And it's really...
And he had an Oscar for that. This is post-Cuba Gooding's Oscar.
Probably right when he was winning it is when they were casting this. I mean, and you just feel like, oh, this is just a slice of, like,
well,
time.
It's that very, like, 90s kind of movie where it's like the bad guys are the... generic kind of guys in tactical gear and vague accents.
Vague motivations.
Yeah.
You know, in fact...
Who are just trying to steal some super weapon. It's like a very, like...
When it's the best thing period. Is the bad guy actually has a great motivation that they then throw out the window to give him a vague motivation.
Right, yeah.
I guess they didn't want him to be sympathetic at all.
I could not wrap my head around why they were doing that. You know, and I'm like, ooh.
He has no compunction to kill.
Exactly.
he kept saying that over and over again.
When they kind of started introducing, when it became pretty clear he was going to be the villain, I was like, ooh, this is interesting. This guy has like a kind of a weird little axe to grind. It's like, no, not really. No, he's just a generic terrorist.
I thought it was going to be a revenge thing, but the revenge kind of went away.
I would have been more interested.
Because he ended up very generic,
And by the end, he's super generic.
Yeah.
And I would have been more interested in a version of this movie where he was the hero. Like, because I almost feel like there might be a draft of this movie where David Paymer is the villain. And the military guy is the hero.
Yeah, he, like, redeems what he did, you know, while he's in prison. Well, we'll get to it. But
So, yeah, it's a lot of setup for a movie, again, starring Skeet Ulrich. All right, so it starts off with, if you haven't seen it, and I recommend you do it, when we're recording this, it's free on Crackle.com. I don't know how much longer it'll be free there. It takes forever to get wherever it's, whenever it's going somewhere, it takes forever to get there.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much in this, there's almost like, a mini movie that the movie starts with and then kind of a second movie that's set in this small town and then the third movie, which is basically the action movie.
Yeah, it is. Kind of three different movies.
So the first movie is this...
Well, it's like they're on this island. I thought it was earlier in history than it actually was. I thought this was supposed to be like the 1960s.
To say this movie has problems with time
and place... No, I thought this was supposed to be like the 1960s, but then it says 10 years later. So is the movie we're watching take place in the 70s? Well, no, it doesn't. Clearly, it's set 99, so...
I didn't think for one moment that it took place in the 60s.
That opening scene?
I thought at one point...
For some reason, I thought it was like 60s, 70s.
I think at one point they, I thought they said 87 or.
Oh, maybe they do say, and I just didn't catch it.
I at one point in my notes, thing. I thought I, it, and this is, it's not handled well.
Jack does that thing where he like writes another movie in his head while he's watching a movie.
It's so because probably, I want it to be better.
Probably out of that movie. That
I want it to be better.
I think Jack self-corrects movies in his head. Like, you know, it's almost like autocorrect is going on while Jack's watching it. So these military guys and scientist David Paymer are doing something with some kind of defoliant. Somehow this movie manages to not use the words Agent Orange, which I don't know if they thought it was copywritten or like why that was, but they don't.
Because it's blue in this movie. It's blue.
I really feel like someone was like, I don't want the owners of Agent Orange to sue us.
The Agent Orange Corporation.
Cease
and desist.
But that's basically like what it is. And there's this whole question of they're supposed to be packing up. David Paymer wants to do one more test. The military general who's heading things up is like, no, we're out of here. We're done. And David Paymer really forces the issue that there's going to be another test. And I don't know. This also reminds me of the 90s. I was just an undergrad in television, radio, film in the 90s. And the big thing that was always pushed in scripts at this time was you had to have conflict. Characters had to be facing adversity or conflict, but this felt very forced, and it ultimately kind of goes nowhere where there's like conflict, but the person who's essentially the protagonist, the general, that never pays off.
Well, like you were saying earlier, how if they were reversed, because in this first scene, it was kind of like the scientist is kind of like the guy pushing it, like, oh no, we have to do this. We have to do this test. And the general's like, no, you know, it's too dangerous. We have to get out of here, whatever, blah, 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 we're done.
Right.
And he's like, you got to take my orders. And that's why they do the test.
They do the test. And he didn't wait for all of his computer data to come in. It's not really, this is like,
I wasn't
also
sure what happened.
I don't know what's going on. This is very like, 90s where it's just like some guy's like working magic on a computer and
Because I wasn't sure, because he says like, oh, the radius, the blast radius, whatever, is like 5 miles or 2 miles, I think it was.
Well, at one point they said, no, they said initially it's like, oh, yards. Get people 200 yards away.
Yeah. So is the blast radius is going to be 200 yards. And so then they go to detonate it. And then all of a sudden,
it's more powerful.
All of a sudden, he's like, no, the computer is saying it's like 150 yards or 150 miles or something. It's like the whole island.
How can you make that kind of a mistake?
It was like a pretty wide margin of error. It was like 5 miles.
No, but still, it was a pretty large margin of error, though.
But I wasn't sure. But what I thought was happening was because he gives the Elvis thing, the bomb to the one guy.
Yes.
Then the guy goes out and like sets it up, whatever. And I thought
set it up, he literally just like opens up these volatile chemicals and puts them into a dumpster. And I'm like, that's it? Like that's the whole handling procedure?
But I thought he was sabotaging something.
Oh.
Like I thought he was, because he was kind of shifty.
Also a more interesting movie.
Maybe none of these military guys need to know what's going on.
I thought that's why it was different than what they thought it was going to be, because he put more in than he was supposed to or something, like on purpose.
Right.
But then he was like, as soon as it started blowing up, he's like, oh shit, like what? He was freaked out and he died. So it wasn't him.
Well, there's like a whole weird thing of he has protective gear with him. He literally just opens up this obviously incredibly dangerous chemical compound, drops some in a dumpster, walks away, and then is like, oh, I'm going to put my face mask on now.
Yeah.
Not before handling this unbelievably toxic gas.
But then
he
takes it off as soon as it starts exploding.
I don't know what was. There was a lot of choices with gas masks in this movie.
We should say, too, that this bomb has to it detonates when it reaches 50 degrees.
Correct.
They have to keep it chilled.
Yes. Yeah,
that's
they
the
make
chill
that
factor.
So when it reaches 50 degrees, it
ignites.
Explodes.
And it turns into basically an even worse version of the Parallax monster from Green Lantern.
Basically.
And this becomes a cloud that eats all organic material. Is that what they were saying?
I don't know. It kind of does a number on it.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I'll say about this movie is like the deaths in it are like uncharacteristically gory for this movie.
They are.
Yeah.
It's like this kind of fun, you know, or it's meant to be like a fun, not silly, but humorous.
Oh, no, it's
like.
Yeah. Well, Cuba Gooding Jr. movie. Is in a different movie from right. these death scenes.
And then someone dies, it's like blood everywhere, and it's like slow motion.
His face
like,
melts off.
Literally, yeah. Well, the face at the end was like disturbing.
Yeah.
It's like when the Nazis open the ark and their faces melt that's off. What I thought, and, yeah.
But well, then that one dude, the assistant, dies a horrific death, and you're seeing like legs melting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which,
because in the scene it gets very serious, because like the thing explodes and they all like start melting. Basically, they're running away and like their skin is peeling off and stuff. It's like, oh wow! But then they kept that going through the whole. Like anytime anyone died, it was like bloody as hell.
It was like, really wow. bloody. So yes. I'm like, ooh.
Which I don't mind, but it's just it didn't fit. In, it was weird in this movie to see that all of a sudden.
I watched this and I was like, ooh, this opening is pretty grim for a movie that I know is going to involve an ice cream truck. Yeah. And I'm like, I haven't even seen it yet, and there's going to be a pretty harsh tonal shift coming at some point.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So then we go to a court martial, and the military guy, the guy who was trying to stop all of this from happening,
right,
gets sentenced to 10 years in military prison.
Well, that's the other thing. Like,
why would he go to prison?
Because he didn't let the scientists take the fall. He said someone's got to take the fall for it.
He said someone's got to take the fall, but it's weird.
So he agreed to take the fall, and then he goes to prison, and he's angry about this?
That's what I was going to say. Well,
but it's also weird.
This makes no sense.
There's never...
You're right.
There's never much of an implication that David Paymer offered to take the fall, or that David...
No, he did, because he walks up to him at the trial. He's like, I wish you would have let me say something more. Or they would have, you know, he's like, he wanted to take the responsibility for it. But the bad guy said, he's like, no, they need you more because you're worth more to them or whatever because you're a scientist.
Because there is this kind of whole thing to the military characters, the military general's character that he is basically... on the outs with the military. Like, his career is essentially moving backwards because he, you know, I don't know, doesn't play well with others or something. But
I didn't get that feeling from the first part of the movie.
Well, remember there's that, like, David Paymer at one point, when David Paymer is saying, like, you have to take the... Yeah, you wouldn't be here if you hadn't been, like, such a screw-up or something.
Like, but still, like, everything up to this point he's done is pretty honorable and selfless.
Like, his primary motivation is getting his men out. Maybe we shouldn't test this weapon until we evacuate the area. The scientist's like, no, I don't work for you. You work for me. I'm going to blow it up anyway. And he's like,
At this point in the movie, now he's taking the fall for it. Military guy is the most heroic character we've met in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
David Paymer is... awesome. He's the villain at this point.
Yeah.
So then we just get a title card 10 years later. I mean, this is guy goes into jail.
Yeah. The 10 door years closes. Later. It says 10 years later, the door opens again. He's door just sitting opens, there.
And he's sitting there with an evil smile on his face. And I just have a note in here. I'm like, okay, I guess he's evil now.
Like,
10 years in Leavenworth will do that to you.
I suppose.
It was just a weird turn because it's like he did this selfless thing to he took the fall and everything, and then he goes to prison and he's angry about being in prison for this thing, and now he wants to get revenge by stealing the thing. And
I wish they had, and maybe I'm asking too much of this movie, I wish they had just given us a little bit of like what happened, you know, or like even a scene,
right? Because like, there had to have been something, because it seems like he had this whole thing set up by the time he got out of prison.
By the time he gets out of prison.
So there had been something going on where something turned him, and then someone working for the prison or something was like, oh, he should, you know, steal a thing and make some money. And
why would he do it in the first place, though? Why not just have him be the bad guy who tried to sabotage the bomb, and he could be the shady guy?
Right.
Then he tried to push the blame on the scientist who didn't want to blow up the weapon, and then he ends up going to jail, and he blames the good guy.
And it all takes place in Nam in the 60s.
In the 60s, exactly.
I wonder maybe this is two drafts cobbled together or something.
I don't know.
Because literally, he gets out of prison,
and then it's like, as far as I know, it's like a couple days later at the most, and like the next time you see him, he's like, goes to his like, the warehouse where all his cronies are, and he's like...
Yeah, let's talk about this. I mean, this is... If you just said, hey, guys, okay, I'm going to come up with the most cliche terrorist gathering spot set I can. Actors, like, go to the costume store and get a terrorist costume. Yeah. I mean, that's what everybody shows up in.
Yeah. But he just, like, walks in. He's like, you all know what to do, so let's do it. And it's like, how do they know what to do?
Like, I have that, too. I'm like,
we don't know what they're going
to
do.
We all know what we have to do. I'm like, I don't. Yeah. Could you tell me?
Because you kind of get the impression like they've been waiting for him to get out so they could do that. It's just yeah. it's just nothing was explained.
This is yeah, this is totally unfounded.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we get another great kind of 90s reference in here, which is, again, the mid-90s reference, when Hollywood was obsessed with fly fishing.
Yes.
This and when, you know, this is when a river runs through it, yep. was big, and like fly fishing was very much the in thing. The, you know, in the cultural eye.
Yes.
So David Paymer, who seems to have almost no guilt about anything that's going on.
Is fly fishing. Why we're following him, I have no idea. There doesn't seem to be much reason.
Well, and Skeet Ulrich, am I saying his name right?
I believe you are.
Ulrich, I feel like I'm never going to say. Yeah, he's, I'm not going to say.
I always said Ulrich.
This is, my pronunciation of his name is going to be like all over the place.
Calm, Skeet. Skeeter.
I'll stay with that.
Nonetheless, he's fly fishing with
So they're fly fishing, and it was unclear to me. This is really the only scene you get with the two of them that is supposed to establish a meaningful relationship.
Yeah.
And by the end of the scene, I was unclear as to what the relationship was. The only thing I could take away was this wasn't the first time they had been at this spot fishing. Huh. But yeah. Other than that, I was
Well, I think the guy comes unclear. The guy comes into the diner every day. So they know each other from the diner, then I guess they meet to go fly fishing, and
he has his theory about how the trout are the warriors, yeah. and you got to think like a soldier or something.
Which I couldn't believe came back.
I know.
It came back in the craziest way. And so Skeet Ulrich works at a diner. The time is all over the place. I couldn't tell if Skeet Ulrich went fishing and then went to work at the diner.
I think
diner.
He did, because he still had the red bandana tied around his head. Yeah.
Okay.
So then, I think he literally went from fishing to that.
Because then the scientist comes in and he also has his like fishing gear on.
Okay.
But wait a minute. Now, I also got the impression that this was like early morning, that he wasn't taking over the night shift.
I did.
No, it was night shift.
Oh, okay. So he was coming in like past dinner hour.
His boss is like, it's 5, or his boss is like, you're late. He's like, no, it's 5:30. I worked late for you this morning, so I'm working. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
There was a whole thing.
Okay.
Whole
okay. No, it made sense.
It was, and his boss. His boss.
Well, I was reading, as I was watching, I was like, wow, this character, like, I don't know if she's gonna come back, but she's putting her all into this, and it's like really well-rounded character for a one scene.
I'm sure
whose name I can't remember.
I can't.
It was like Denise or something.
Darlene, because it's Darlene's diner. I feel like it must have only been like maybe 2 days on set, in every shot, I think she was just like, this is mine.
This is mine.
Like she just absolutely is like. Acting, like all out on this. I kept thinking she was going to come back too. Or why didn't at some point the director say to her, "Hey, let's take the brassiness down about 50% because this has turned into a paper towel commercial, basically like level acting."
Yeah.
I loved that.
So she leaves him with the diner. He's got to take her. He's basically just the only person in the diner for the rest of the night. And the doctor's there, and he is
the cook, and he's like literally it's a one man show. Yeah, he's cooking like and serving and food and
whatever
and
else.
Yeah. I mean,
they also say it's a general store too, so they must have like a grocery store portion.
That's right, because they sell beer.
Yep.
And then
these cops
and ice cream,
which comes in. Yeah, that's gonna be very important.
That's true, boy. That's a lot. So now, so at some point, David Paymer.
The
doctor's eating. You're right.
The doctor's eating at his stool, and then this guy comes up. Can I sit next to you? In his bizarre accent, he says, "Sure." And then, oh no, face to face, it's the general and the scientist are meeting each other again, or the colonel or the lieutenant or whatever his rank was. And they have this brief conversation about, I took the fall and I had to be in prison. And the scientist is like, I offered to take the fall.
I don't even think it was like that. It was like some really, like, vague conversation where he like made like allusions to things, and it was
really vague. Like David Paymer is confused at the end of the conversation. Yeah.
That's what that look at the end of the conversation was, when he's staring off into space. It wasn't guilt. It was confusion.
Yeah, David Paymer is probably like, what did happen to that first movie I was in?
That was a fun one.
So then, and by the way, the Mickey Mousing of the music that goes on in this scene is crazy. Like they're, I think. I have to feel like somebody was nervous that the audience wasn't totally tuned in yet to that the general's now a bad guy. Guy was just a hero is now a bad guy. Yeah. So they're like, ooh, get some drone noise under there so that people, I don't want anyone to, misunderstand what's happening with him. And so then David Paymer, busts out to the, he goes to work, I think.
The laboratory he works
to at. The lab. He busts in, and a guard gives David Paymer a fly fishing tie.
Yeah, this was
I don't think
it comes back, does it?
No, it kind of does,
but for no reason.
No reason, yeah.
And they make such a point of it that I'm like, oh, this is important. But then at the same time, I'm like, how is this possibly going to be important? And it's not important. There's even an insert shot of ooh.
Yeah.
And David Paymer even looks at the tie. He's like, ooh. Yeah. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
And then the bad guys, the terrorists show up. They take over this top secret military lab. Like, they're the North Koreans and Olympus has fallen. Yeah. And they just basically walk in and own it. Yeah. This is, it's pretty grisly too.
They just come up behind
there's
the guards.
There's a lot of throats.
More of that gore.
For a movie that is going to, with every minute that goes by, going to turn more and more into a slapstick comedy.
Oh, yeah.
You don't normally see this many throats slit
in
a slapstick comedy. And they get in the General Brenner. His name is Brenner. He shoots David Paymer through a window, but when he gets into the room, David Paymer's gone. And then the general's sees this fishing fly, and he's like, ooh.
People are fascinated by this. No one
can see this fly fishing tie and not be fascinated by it. Yeah. He grabs it, he's like, ooh.
It's got blood on it.
Yeah. And then says to his team, he takes the fishing fly thing and then says, forget about him. And I'm like, forget about him?
Yeah, I thought that was the whole thing was you wanted revenge on this guy.
Yeah, you wanted revenge. And this guy couldn't be more than 10 feet away. Right. What did you forget about
Probably
him?
Probably not. He got out and he got his SUV and he...
Well, people, getting shot in the world of Chill Factor is not a big deal.
Yeah.
You're pretty good in Chill Factor. Yeah. And in fact, if you get shot and then you don't get shot again real soon, you actually get better. Fast. Yeah. Your healing factor comes in.
Yeah,
So so then it cuts to the diner and Cuba Gooding Jr. comes in.
This I thought was really strange because he comes in with a pallet of ice cream, but there's this bizarre negotiation where he wants cash.
Well, he tells him, he's like, oh, and the Andy, the boss,
the normal delivery guy?
Says he needs cash for this delivery. And Skeetolf is like, no, we don't usually do cash. We do invoices. He's like, no, I need cash. I need $450 cash. And I was like, this whole discussion about the cash. And
I get the sense they don't know each other. So this is Cuba Gooding shows up and he's the new guy. So already something shady is going on. So I'm thinking that Cuba Gooding is one of the bad guys as an audience watcher. He's trying to feel this guy out. Maybe he was sent ahead by General Brenner to see if this guy's important because of the connection with the fly fishing thing, which how the hell would he know about it? But he found it anyway.
Maybe.
So I thought maybe Cuba Gooding is maybe keep an eye on that kid. Maybe he knows something. And that's why it's weird and he's getting it wrong. We take cash. You know we don't take cash. I thought that was kind of the thing that was going on.
Yeah, and this is
in
this other movie. I mean, Cuba Gooding Jr. is in a straight up. I mean, he's almost in a sitcom.
Yeah, he's definitely in something else. Yeah.
And I'd say
Skeet Ulrich kind of weaves in and out of that movie.
Oh yeah, Skeet Ulrich is existing in two different timelines.
Cuba's in his own movie. Yeah, the terrorist or any other.
Yeah. I do want to say, as much as I think I'm going to bust on him in this movie, I don't really blame Cuba Gooding Jr.
I liked him in it.
I like him in it.
Well, he's doing what he's told. He's reading the dialogue.
I think he's a victim of a terrible script and a movie that just decided to kind of... this doesn't feel like 99. This feels like something you would have seen earlier of
95.
Oh, the minority character is going to be a wisecracking.
Yep.
And it's because I'm watching this and I'm like, is this, because I felt really bad for Cuba Gooding Jr. because I'm like, he is a good actor. And I'm like, if this movie hurt his career, that's a crime, because I cannot. Yeah. He is way better than what we're he's being basically asked and told to do.
And he wasn't too wisecrack. I mean, the trailer made it look like that's all he was doing was cracking wise, but it was more like he was reacting how a normal person would react to these things.
He
like,
does in some.
But he was kind of like the audience.
But there are some straight up Saturday morning sitcom moments.
It's not like every line.
He gets top billing too, and he's like playing second fill in this movie.
It really is Skeet Ulrich's movie, ultimately.
Yeah.
But and
they really expected him to be something.
And I have to think that as they were looking at dailies, they were probably like, there will not be another Skeet Ulrich movie.
This is something else. Yeah,
this is a one-shot deal. And this is the line that I thought was going to be the big pull quote. So this small town sheriff and deputy, although I don't know, again, I don't know what the relationship is.
I don't understand because
I don't know who is the superior officer.
I don't know.
And two officers come in and seem to almost trade who's in charge.
They're doing good cop, bad cop.
Because they think he's like selling alcohol to minors.
And then, so the cop who talks first comes in, he's this older guy. This is what he comes right in and said. I had to write this down. So, Mason, last Wednesday night, were you out drifting like the trash you are, or were you working? Also, we'll have two coffees, please. Were you drifting like the trash you are, and then you want that person to provide you with coffee? That's
Maybe they were just poking fun at each other. Maybe that's just they're roasting each other. Like, that's the nature of the relationship.
I did kind of think about that for a second. Then I'm like, nope, Skeet Ulrich's not cool with
like
this.
Like saying, hey, Skeet, you son of a bitch, you have any more of that poison you call coffee? Have me some. Okay.
Yeah,
because
then the other cop's like, whoa, chill out there, guy.
Yeah.
Because he had to say the name of the movie, kind of. They should have called this movie Chill Out.
That's true. Well, and then, because then he's like, our understanding is you were selling beer to this kid, and it's a plot point that like doesn't go away. It's almost like the Benghazi storyline, like you know, like Batman versus Superman. Like they keep talking about this with kind of this like third officer being
mistake.
I'm not saying you did sell beer to him, but stop selling beer to him. It's you know, it's like I didn't sell any beer to him. I was ultimately at the end of the day, I was almost hoping that was going to come back towards the end of the movie. Yeah. We were going to learn hoping, if like, he did sell beer to him.
The kid would come back and be like, no, I just lied about that, Dad.
Yeah, he did sell me.
He's the son of the cop, is the kid.
He's not even a character, this kid.
No.
Reason for the cops to hate this character for no reason. Like, why does he even have to be a drifter? Why can't he just be a guy who owns this general store? Why have that extra layer of like to give him a characteristic? Like, oh, I used to be at a football team and I screwed up, and now I'm a drifter, and I work in this store, and now here I am with this top secret gas because I just happened to coincidentally go fishing with this government guy who invented it.
It's really weird. Like, I feel like they're trying to give Skeet Ulrich's character another layer, but it's not really working. Like, it doesn't
make him like the nephew of the guy who's the scientist, and
it didn't really matter his background.
Yeah, it didn't matter. And then so then the cop is also like, hey, I know you did this. I know you sold this kid beer. I know what your record, conviction for vagrancy. Vagrancy? That's his big record. That's vagrancy. Oh, clearly this guy's, I was like, okay.
More like vagary.
So the cops finally leave, and David Paymer comes. He busts in, and Cuba Gooding Jr. is still there because like they're still like negotiating on like
we
this
get
cash
check
payment.
Or, no, we don't take tech. We take cash. Oh, okay. This ice cream doesn't even taste any good. He kept saying that too.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like it's ice cream.
Yeah, that kept being like a thing that it's like
or they
poor
forgot to put
quality
the sugar
ice
in.
Cream.
I don't know.
And so David Paymer busts in. He's covered in blood. Everybody freaks out. And I just have so many notes here about there's so much exposition. There's so much exposition that at different points, David Paymer, who we believe to be dying the entire time, they'll cut away to the terrorists and come back. And David Paymer's still talking. In fact, David Paymer.
Yeah, he just, because he's like, Skeet Ulrich or whatever is like, what's going on? And then they cut to the terrorists and come back. And like, Skeet Ulrich is like, so we have to keep it below 50 degrees,
Yeah.
Well, he just went through the whole thing.
In a cutaway, David Paymer apparently went through the whole backstory. And then they cut away to the terrorists again and come back, and David Paymer is still talking. I'm like, my God, this guy is more, like, who, his death is. And at one point, David Paymer tells Skeet Ulrich, you're the only one I can trust. I'm like, okay, and I'm like, I really feel like you had given us more of a basis for this. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel earned.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And Cuba Gooding Jr. comes over and like puts his like finger on David Paymer's neck. He's like, "Sorry, man, he's dead." By the way, David Paymer's character is still obviously moving. Out, right? He's moving. His arms are moving. I'm like, what? This is terrible.
And how convenient it is, by the way, that they have a device that they have to keep chilled, and a guy with an ice cream truck just happened to walk in that morning.
Yeah. Well, and David Paymer does say that as he comes busting in. He's like, "We need your truck." And I was like, okay.
Did he just wander in town looking for ice cream trucks?
That's convenient. Yeah. So they now have something to drive, hence chill now has a double meaning. They got to keep it chilled, but they're also in an ice cream truck.
Yeah.
So so at this point, the terrorists see doctors or the scientist's truck outside of like a gas station across the street or something.
Right.
And somehow deduce that he's actually in the general store.
Right.
So the main, what's his name?
General Brenner.
Brenner goes in there and he's like acting all weird. He's like, "Oh, you got any dead scientists here?"
It's basically what he says. Yeah.
And he's like kind of skulking around looking, checking it out, seeing if he can see, you know, find the guy or whatever. Which, by the way, there's like, how do you not see? There should have been like a puddle of blood where the guy was laying, because he was bleeding out.
Yeah, how did they clean up?
Yeah, because they're sitting at the counter like acting all cash, like, oh.
Yeah, we're led to believe that in like a matter of like 15 seconds, they cleaned up a bloody corpse,
hung it up,
and cleaned themselves up, and then we sat casually at the counter. Yeah.
So he grabs a coffee and drinks a coffee wherever he's like talking and basically kind of being threatening, whatever, and they're like, "No, we don't know anything, don't know anything."
He asks where the bathroom is, and he says, "Assumption can be deadly," or something stupid like that. You assume we have a bathroom? Yeah. Yes, we have a bathroom. What?
Yeah, we do have a bathroom. that assumption was not deadly.
So he like goes to leave, and Skate Walsh is like, "Oh, hey, that's 50 cents for the coffee." And then he comes back and like takes out the fishing fly, which is like still bloody, and he like throws it down the counter. And he like just grins at him and like walks out.
And like, and with a dollar,
right?
With
a dollar. Which makes no sense, because the fishing fly would imply, oh, your buddy who was fishing is dead, but we all know that he's dead.
His body's in the
everybody
body.
Knows that he's dead. So what's with this threat?
And it would sort of like imply that it's almost like the general is saying, I know that you know that this dude is dead, but it's like, if that's true, then what are you doing? Right. Like, why are you leaving? Like, it didn't make any sense.
So after some convincing, they get into the ice cream truck.
Yes.
Because Cuba Gooding Jr. really doesn't want to do this, but he convinces them with a gun. He's got a gun.
Yep.
He holds a gun to him and says, "Oh, well, we're going in your truck."
First, he offers him $50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they get in the truck and they start to coast through the town. For some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it was like Skeet Ulrich's like, yeah, the terrorist guys will never notice us if we coast through the town in an ice cream truck.
Yeah. I feel like that's more conspicuous than...
It is. Also, at this point, it is revealed at this point in the movie where the movie is happening. We've been in this movie for a while
now. Yeah, we have.
I mean, and it's real. Were either of you shocked when they're basically like announced that they're in Montana? I did not think we
when
were in
Montana.
Driving,
no, when I didn't they started driving through the desert, I was like, oh, I guess this is like...
I thought for sure we were in the South. Because like Darlene's southern accent is like to 15, and he basically.
Yeah, and in the beginning of the movie, Ulrich seemed to have some kind of a southern thing
He
going
seemed to have
too.
A southern accent. The cops seemed to have a southern accent. So I'm like, when they said Montana, I'm like, what are you talking about? This is not... This movie.
It was
like,
cheaper to film there.
I was like, okay. And as even as they coast out of town, we could write a book about how two terrorists take a picture of the ice cream truck and somehow fax the picture of the ice cream truck to the other terrorist car.
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
Why not just say, hey, asshole, he's in an ice cream truck.
Yeah, look, hey, some guys in an ice cream truck just drove out. Like, this was so weird.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't even know why it was necessary. And then like, General Brenner is like, he looks at the picture of the ice cream truck and he goes, it appears someone has been lying to us. I'm like, how? Like, because an ice cream truck drove, the ice cream truck who you just met the driver of left town. Right. Like, who's lying to you? Like, nothing here implies a lie.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So some chase takes place. This is the one where they kill the motorcyclist, like, very brutally, like, driving him in front of another truck.
Can I say, before we get to that chase, which is crazy, we also get, they have a chemical weapon in the back of this ice cream truck, and it is revealed Cuba Gooding Jr. is more worried about the possibility that he could be charged with driving a stolen vehicle than anything else. And, I mean, I want Skeeto to be like, dude, like, we could wipe out this state with what is in the back of your truck. Like, you know, I think... But, yeah, you know, it's, again, they're like, making Cuba Gooding Jr. play this, like, ridiculous comic relief role that his...
They also keep mentioning, like, you stole the truck. I didn't steal the truck. Like, he's... Like again, we need back story on this. Why couldn't he just be an ice cream delivery man?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
like, we had to get into this complicated subplot where he stole the truck from his boss because he felt unappreciated in his job, and he got passed over for jobs because he was...
And it's really dumb.
I don't know. I mean, a black guy or something, what they're trying to imply? I don't know.
I think they might... I think... Well, I that's...
They don't go out and say it.
So, I mean, I think...
not that any of that is important.
It's not important. It's not important. But Jack Salt's right. The movie would have been better without any of it.
Just like Skeet Ulrich's big reveal of who he is later on in the paddling scene.
Yeah.
So basically there's just a chase scene, and they kill a motorcyclist and then get away.
Well, brutally. Like, they force him. Basically, two motorcyclists are chasing them. Cuba Gooding Jr. like swerves the truck, and one guy is forced into like an oncoming truck. I'm like, and dies of grisly death.
Yeah, and then they like high five and fist pump over. I was like, Jesus,
he just murdered somebody. He just murdered somebody. But he was in black tactical gear. It was the 90s. He was a bad guy. They had to kill him.
Yeah.
They had to kill him.
Yeah, this movie also borrows a little from Twister. Like, I feel like, you know, the Cary Elwes, like, bad. Remember the bad Tornado Hunters? They were like, hey, are any of those props in those costumes left? You know, are those any of those available? We'll take them. And also, like, then another guy gets on top of the roof, gets onto the actual ice cream truck, gets into the ice cream truck.
Yep.
And then gets up onto the... He and Skeet Ulrich are ultimately fighting...
On top of it.
On the roof of an ice cream truck. This is where we find out that
the gun isn't loaded. He hijacked Cuba Gooding with an unloaded gun.
Unloaded gun.
Which is not that important.
And another grisly death. Cuba Gooding Jr.
Oh, yes.
Like, pulls the truck under...
There's like a rock overhang.
A guy gets his head bashed by it.
Yeah.
And lands at a car. There was a car following,
like a normal person's car.
Hey, is that two guys fighting on the roof of a truck? We should follow right behind it.
Gotta keep
right
close.
Behind it. I don't want to miss
this.
They're
trying to save gas mileage. They're trying to get the drag from the truck to save gas mileage.
The fact that their windshield is broken is really their own fault. If you're following a fight,
it was just to give a nice end capper to getting your face smashed in at 60 miles an hour right into a piece of rock.
Yeah,
and you fly back and land on some shattered glass.
I laughed at that.
That was pretty bad.
More fist pumping.
That's right.
Yeah. So then they drive on some more, and they come up to...
It's like a switchback.
And the bad guy like pulls out a bazooka.
Yeah.
And in a rocket moment, he shoots a gas truck that's ahead of them or something.
It has to be a gas truck because it blows up. Like,
it explodes and it destroys part of the road and like collapses part of the road.
Yep.
So in order for them to get past, they have to like inch past. Which this scene I actually thought was pretty well done. It was like intense.
This is a scene. It's not a bad scene.
Yeah.
And it's totally ripped off from... two movies, but one's a remake. The other, Wages of Fear and Sorcerer, which are movies both deal with a crew of guys who are traveling through the jungle with truckloads of nitroglycerin. And this is, at times, almost shot for shot, like a ripoff of Wages with Fear. But it is pretty effective.
Yeah, because they only have like a little bit of space to squeeze by, or else they'll fall off the mountain or the cliff, basically.
Yeah.
I just thought it was, you know, well done for this movie, especially.
Some of the stunt work in general, especially in this portion of the movie, was pretty good. Like, there's actually the stunt work of, like, the guys climbing on and around the truck was like, wow, that's like, good, like, practical stunt.
They're blowing the budget on this scene.
I just have to say that loud, thunderous booming in the background is my rabbit hopping around. So just for people listening at home.
He's trying it's to get
giant,
it on this.
My giant rabbit.
His giant rabbit.
We stuffed a United Olympus.
Oh, that's the DeForest
Kelly. Clarice, think about that. Giant rabbits.
Kathleen keeps suggesting we do that.
We should do that.
It's fantastic.
We should do that.
So they get past this and... they drive up a little more and what? Oh, like they there's somehow like
a, there's a hay truck in front of them.
Yeah, they somehow flip the truck.
Yeah,
they like drive up onto a guardrail
and flip the truck
onto its side
and seem well. Oh, even more than that, they drive up into a guardrail and a car is coming straight at the truck.
Yeah,
and both the ice cream truck and the car coming at them violently collide.
Yeah,
and the truck tips on the guardrail. Mm-hmm. Which Skeet Ulrich and Cuba Gooding Jr.'s characters have no strong reaction to.
It
was like, this was like, yep. Yeah, I kind of figured that was what was going
to
happen.
Now, this stuff they're using is pretty stable to physical agitation. Like, this thing's getting shaken around like mad crazy.
It's just temperature based.
It's pretty inert.
It gets around pretty
And Cuba Gooding Jr. is worried about the ice cream.
He keeps trying to like rescue it. Like Skeet Ulrich is pulling is pulling the stuff out so he could put it in a bag and maybe throw some ice cream sandwiches on top of it to keep it cold. And then Cooper Gooding's like, no, he's like grabbing the big tubs of ice cream.
Yeah.
And he's like, leave it. And they got to run. I mean, this isn't his livelihood. He to sell all the
ice cream. As
an nephew to his boss.
He's trying to sell all the ice cream to make money.
Oh, he keeps saying he's got like $10,000 of ice cream. Yeah. I highly doubt it. It's going to be some good ice cream. And he's already said it's not.
Yeah. In a minute when I laughed when the bad guy, when Brenner is like giving like his serious, like, we have to find them and kill them or whatever. And then he like lifts up an ice cream sandwich and just takes a bite.
Eats it, yeah.
And I like how he looks down at it like it doesn't taste good.
Do you notice how, too, Cuba Gooding Jr. checks on the ice cream? No one goes and talks to the guy in the car that hit them.
Yep. Yeah.
That guy finally comes out. He's like, hey, are you guys all right? I'm like, yup, dude. Nobody cared about
you. They, like, hold the gun, they hold the gun on him and he says, he's like, crazy. Coward. He's a crazy man. Why are they doing this to this poor guy?
Gotta take his boat.
Can we have your boat? There's a big serious thing. And then we get a third guy in the movie.
It should almost be like a reason for this. And there's no way to do it as a reason for this. Where they're like, refuse to contact other people to talk about this. And the movie sets up like, oh yeah, there are cell phones in this world.
Well, yeah.
And in fact, characters do try to make calls at some points, and then other points are like, nah, I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
Well, somewhere along the way, the cop gets involved too, because he's like after him, and I think it's here. He like pulls up to the scene, and Brenner's like, oh, act cool, guys, act natural. And like he acts like the army guy in charge of this thing that's going on, and he needs the cops' help and stuff.
And I like how no other driver is like, that guy just shot a rocket launcher at a gas truck. Like, you know.
No one seemed to care about that.
Other people seem to just be unwilling to provide any information. Oh.
So they take the boat. And they push it over, like, the ravine, or over, like, the edge of the...
Kind of like it's like a
cliff.
It's like a cliff, basically. Yeah.
And they ride in it.
Did you hear downhill. Did you hear the soundtrack that was playing as they go down the hill in this boat?
I don't remember it.
I don't. They didn't seem to fully commit to it because they play this music at like not like a low level, but not like a high level, but a banjo music playing as they're shooting down the hill in this boat.
That was a weird choice.
Yeah, I felt like somebody thought it would be funny, and then some other people were like, not all in on it.
They compromised.
Yeah.
So they ride this boat down the cliff and end up in the water.
Yeah.
And just end up paddling in the water a little bit.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird, and that's where we find out that Skeet Ulrich
time for exposition.
Skeet Ulrich was drunk driving with his friend.
Yes.
It sort of implied that he was drunk driving,
and
his
friend got
this football
scholarship to some college, and he screwed up.
Well, the weird thing, like, I thought about this conversation was like, it's just small but dumb, but it just made me think was he's like, Skeet Ulrich was like, yeah, I was a split back at. You know, Siena College
or
something.
He said he was a split end.
A split end, that's what it was.
And I'm like,
Is that a football term? I've never heard of that.
Tight end.
Well, I've heard of that.
Well, it's a very specific term.
It's not like
you would never use it conversationally. You would be like, I was a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to think of how I'd put it. Like, you wouldn't say, God, I don't even know. Like, it's way too specific a piece of information.
Got it.
Yeah.
Because you'd have to explain what that is. So you just ignore it and you use a general term.
Yeah.
But he's like, my buddy was a first round pick. And Cuba Gooding Jr. is like, oh, Robert Del Rio? Like,
how do you know his name?
You don't know what year he graduated. You don't know like any information about this. You just remember every first round pick from this college.
He's highly intuitive.
Yeah, Kentucky. Because Kentucky football is so well known,
like,
too.
Why would he know that name? He's like, yeah, he's my friend. Yeah, we were driving and we got in an accident and he got hurt and he could never play football again. And so I decided to drift.
Yeah.
So he drifted.
But he couldn't have killed the guy because then he couldn't be heroic. Has to have made a small mistake, but not a big one.
And so they end up in Missoula, Montana.
But they didn't want to go through Missoula. There was an argument of that before. We're not going through Missoula. I'll get caught with this ice cream truck.
And there are definitely phones in Missoula, Montana.
Sure.
I mean,
there are certainly
phones. They seem to have a phone with them that is still working. And they just, I don't know. Like, and the movie just almost doesn't want to touch this issue because it is so dumb. But like, call someone.
Yeah.
Anyone.
Call the army base. And
call the army base.
Like, hey,
which they do later in the film.
Yeah.
Later in the film, he's like, oh, give me that Fort MacGruber. They can help us. Yeah. Oh, boy. Ay.
Ice cream.
Now, what? Okay, so this, I was.
Oh, yeah, and they also have the stuff like towing behind them underwater because it's a glacier fed river.
That's right.
It's got to be at least 50 degrees in there, so he's got it in the water.
Yeah. That's right. And then in Missoula. Cuba Gooding Jr.
He goes back to Andy's Ice Cream.
Goes to Andy's Ice Cream. We meet the
famous
Andy.
Which he's trying to avoid anyway. He didn't want to go through Missoula because he wanted to avoid it. What, do they need another ice cream truck?
Yeah, he does. He's stealing his, not ice cream truck, he's stealing his pickup truck.
Yeah.
So that.
Well, yeah, I remember now.
Yeah.
Okay.
But as he's stealing the pickup truck, Andy comes in and he's like, hey, you can't steal my truck again. And then Brenner comes in and he's like, hey.
Yeah, and at this point, Cuba Gooding Jr. should be like, ooh, I guess this really going to the Andy's Ice Cream was in huge letters on the side of that truck. Maybe this is the one place they shouldn't have gone. If I was going to go anywhere else. So he kidnaps... how did this work out? He kidnaps
Cuba Gooding Jr. And makes him call... Skeet Ulrich, who's in like a general store or whatever.
And available.
Buying ice.
Because Skeet Ulrich's not calling anyone else.
Yeah.
So
No. He's got to keep the line free.
Is free to be called.
So he just says like, oh, we got to make a deal with him. We got to give him the stuff. And Skeet Ulrich like comes up with a plan based on, they play like the voiceover of the scientist's.
The David Paymer force ghost comes in.
Got to remember the trout. The trout. They outsmart the trout.
His fly fishing advice.
Use. The trout is a warrior. The trout, you have to outthink the hunter.
Use the fish, Skeet. Use the fish.
I'm reminded at this moment.
The fish is with you.
I'm reminded at this moment, way back at the beginning of the movie, when the scientist, David Paymer, is confronted by Brenner, and then Brenner leaves, and he's giving that 1,000-yard stare. That Skeet Ulrich does say, "Hey, here's your breakfast," and he hands him a giant fish on a plate.
For some reason,
I remember that as being ridiculous.
It was played pretty ridiculous,
and I totally forgot about it until just now. We may continue.
I really wanted Skeet Ulrich in this moment, as we're hearing David Paymer's ghostly voiceover come in, for him to be like, just on the phone to Brenner, be like, "I'm turning off the tracking computer."
Switch off the targeting computer. What's wrong?
Yeah. So he's like looking around at like herbs and like I don't know, canisters and stuff, and he's like formulating this plan.
At one point, doesn't he pick up like
Captain
a thing of candy or something?
He picks up something.
It had been something like that. Yeah.
He like picks up some random like impulse buy item and like looks at it like he's thinking about buying it.
He's like, I'll take this.
Yeah.
So he comes up with this plan, which obviously is to
use fishing lures.
The whole thing is like making bait for this guy, which would be a fake bomb.
Right.
So he like comes up with, I don't know how he makes, how he knows like what the stuff, I don't know.
I don't know.
He makes it look exactly like the stuff in the Elvis.
The actual bomb. Yeah.
Makes a decoy.
So they meet on a dam, right?
Yes. Because Brenner had been like, we'll meet you on this dam. And somehow at this point too, we forgot to talk about this, where a military guy does come into the movie and immediately gets totally confused. Where I mean, there's a crazy scene. Like, yeah, he comes in. And he's like, "All right, hold on. We got to find out where this Elvis bomb is." And then he's and someone's like, "Oh, they're already tracking a suspect. It's this drifter." And the military guy's immediately like, "What? Like, what is a drifter doing with our bomb?"
That's good. Yeah. The cop's like, "No, it couldn't be a drifter." Or no, he says a drifter, and the guy's like, "I can't be a drifter though." It's like,
yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
This guy's a professional.
Yeah, and then he's like, "Ah, yeah, we gotta find. Did they find the body of David Paymer?" And they're like, "No, we haven't found it." Then this like local cop is like, "Oh, we found it at a diner." And I'm like, is anyone talking to anyone?
No, none of these organizations are communicating with anyone.
Yeah.
So they meet on this bridge, and he's like holding the fake Elvis over the edge of the dam.
Yeah.
And he's like, you give me Cuba Gooding Jr., right? And then I'll give you the bomb.
Yep.
Yes.
And so he like pushes Cuba over to him, and then he like throws the thing at him, like the end of the rope, and then they run away.
Yeah.
And he like catches the thing and reels it up, and the woman shoots Skeet Ulrich in the leg.
Then they decide to screw capture them by torturing him by putting a little droplet of the chemical in front of them.
Well, it's not torturing him.
It's an attempt to kill him because it's supposed to warm up.
Yeah,
the point
is that they're streaming it live to like potential buyers for.
Oh, that's right. For the device. To these other shady countries.
So they're like, let's put a little out, and so they can see what it will do to. Yeah. To people.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they put a little glob of it and then like run away and like watch from the truck.
Which you'd think that Brenner of all people would be like, "Yeah, guys, sometimes this stuff is a little more volatile than we think. We might want to get a little further away. I have some experience with this issue."
This makes no sense because he says earlier, right? Or does it come later that he says that his whole motivation was that when he was in Vietnam, he hated the way the government tortured civilians. He hated making war on civilians. And then he was so heroic that he didn't want this chemical used in a way that might hurt his men, even in a controlled environment, just to test it. Then he takes the fall for something he didn't do and he goes to jail. Now all of a sudden he's willing to torture innocent civilians with this horrible weapon just because he sat in prison for a while and what? Went crazy or got greedy? Like, this doesn't make any sense. This character literally is just two characters.
Yeah,
so played by the same actor.
They like immediately escape. Skeet Ulrich has a knife on him that they use to cut their ropes from their legs and their.
Put your hand in my pants.
Yeah,
yeah. We get a little bit of like physical comedy here. Yeah.
So they run away as everyone stops watching the stream. No one, because it didn't work.
The
so
buyers aren't. Yeah, are not impressed.
So then they go to chase him down, but then they steal it. Or no,
well, the Skeet Ulrich
has a UPS truck or something.
A UPS truck. Well, and then, but at this, we should also talk too about the military does show up during helicopters, and we get a great scene where Brenner is holding like the bomb, and you hear these military guys go, they're like, "All right, I've got the guy with the container, we're coming in hot," and then the military guy goes, "That's not Mason," and they're like. Oh, you mean the drifter you just heard about? That you're going to be like, "Oh, don't get the guy with the bomb. It's not that.
You're not looking for the dude we just learned
about.
You're not looking for Mason. You're looking for the bomb."
And someone else is like, "We're going in anyway." I hope so.
Don't worry about the drifter later.
Yeah. And then there's this whole weird kind of standoff because the military actually come in.
They come in, they stop him, they're like, "Give us a bomb." And he's like, "No. Leave or I'll detonate it."
That's what he says. He goes, "Leave or I'll detonate it." And I'm like, wow, how are they going to get out of this? Nope. Military's like, "Yeah, we're going to leave."
Yep.
In fact, one of the other military guys says, "Why are we leaving?" And that military leader goes,
"We'll get him when he tries to meet the buyer.
We're going to intercept him at an exit point." And I'm like, why? You have him. Right, how is that going to be better? Yeah. You have him in an isolated location right now.
Do not have anyone there who could just like shoot him in the head from
behind or something,
and grab the bomb.
Even if the bomb goes off, you're still probably better off with that thing going off there than like at a heavily populated area. I'm like, this is in a movie full of dumb plot contrivances. This is the dumbest one when they actually leave.
Yeah.
So dumb that they had to shine a light on it and have one of the military guys be like, "I don't think this makes sense."
So Skeet Ulrich and Cuba Gooding Jr. get in the UPS truck that Skeet had put aside.
Yeah.
And they drive away.
They drive away.
And they end up. Is this where they go through to the tunnel?
they are headed towards
the tunnel. Okay, so the terrorists realize that Skeet Ulrich and Cuba Gooding Jr. still have Elvis, the canisters of the stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so they start chasing him down.
Because, and by the way, David Brenner, the great stand-up comedian, General Brenner, at one point says to his team, they're like, what are we going to do? And he goes, nothing has changed. I'm like, what? And he goes, the army made a tactical withdrawal. It's just those two amateurs now. What is going on? How?
So he ends up, I think Skeet Ulrich ends up getting on the phone with the main military guy.
Oh, yeah. You know when he could have told them? Before. He could have called them anytime, this fake train and been like, guys, I'm going to leave the bomb in a UPS truck.
Go get it.
Come on.
But we have him distracted.
Yeah.
So they...
Or even told them, guys, shoot him. That's not even the real bomb.
Right. Yeah, he could have.
Yeah, just yell. So
they knew the twist to be revealed.
They're like driving towards this tunnel, and he tells the military guy, like, he's chasing us down. We have the bomb. He doesn't have it. So they decide to, they're going to destroy or kill the two terrorist trucks before they can go in the tunnel.
Right.
So as Skeet Ulrich drives them in the tunnel, they bomb the two trucks and they explode.
This is a key point.
Yes, they explode.
They sent a missile at the two trucks. They explode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, total fireball.
Right.
Keep that in mind.
Yep. Yeah, it's not like they shot in the road in front of them and they, you know.
Yeah, it's not like a truck
they
flipped
them,
over.
They hit them directly.
Not to mention the amount of heat that's usually involved
like
in an explosion.
The car equivalent of the Death Star blowing
right.
up when they hit both of these.
It was pretty intense.
So they're like, okay, we just have to get through this tunnel and the military's on the other side will give them the bomb. And then, of course, Sergeant Pepper or whatever his name
is. Was it like Pappas? Was that?
It was
Pappas, like some weird name. Yeah.
Pappas. Yeah. Deputy Pappas is blocking off the road.
I want to call him Sergeant Pepper.
He's like a one man. He's literally blocking off the road. And I'm not even 100% sure why Skeet Ulrich and Cuba Gooding Jr.
Why they stopped.
Yeah. I mean, that's just not.
Kept driving through. Yeah.
I would have just been like, we're going
to sacrificing
have,
this cop to.
I would just be like, save, I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, yeah, to save essentially the Northwestern mm-hmm. United States, like this cop who has no idea what he's talking about. He's going to have to.
Because the bomb, now they have a thermometer. Which is reading like 40, I think it was like 48.5 degrees at this point. It just keeps going up. And so they're like fighting with the cop, and he's like, no, you guys, you stupid drifter, your drifting ways are over.
You soda jerk drifter.
They call him a soda jerk. He does.
They do call him a soda jerk drifter.
He's just a soda jerk burger flipper.
Yeah.
So, but they're like, so the bomb is like getting warmer and warmer. It's at like 49.7 or something. And they're like, at the same time, the military seals off one of the entrances to the tunnel.
Yeah.
And because they tell him, like, it's going to hit 50 in, like, 4 seconds, so
yeah,
you have to seal off. So they seal off one, and see all are just like, oh, we needed was ice, man. If we just got ice, we'd be fine. And like, some guy, like...
Y'all need ice? Yeah. Why didn't you say nothing?
I got a whole cooler full of beers back here.
I love that guy who's all in.
Hero of the movie.
Like, he has no idea
a bomb? You need to keep cool? Hey.
He say that. He has no idea why they need ice.
No idea what's happening.
Like, I got ice.
Yeah. You got all the ice you need. Yeah. Come on over.
So they yell back to the military guy. They're like, don't sail the tunnel. We got ice. We got ice.
Yeah.
So they put it back on ice. And then they find they can't go out the exit or the other end because there's like ammunition in the car that's on fire that's exploding and firing ammunition everywhere.
Crazy. Yeah.
So they can't go that way. So they have to find an alternate exit, which is like a tunnel through the ceiling or whatever to go up to the surface.
Yeah.
And so my favorite part is like the cop. It's like his heroic moment. Like, I'll lead them all out. But it was like kind of like cowardly, like, I'll go first.
Yeah, it's really dumb. I'm like, they have a vent shift. I'm like, why doesn't, hey, you know what? Maybe we should send out first the chemical weapon that could kill everyone.
I'm the first one out, guys.
Yeah. Then the guy with the ice.
Yeah. The guy with the ice. Yeah.
Because they can't even, like, it's so goofy. They can't even keep the chemical weapon
in the cooler, yeah.
Like, Skeet Ulrich is like putting ice in his shirt. I'm like, you know what?
It's on
the
ice.
World, this version of the world might as well blow up.
Yeah, because it's already on ice. All you do is go up and say to the military, like, okay, it's in there. It's in a cooler in this.
Here it is in a cooler.
Yeah. There's some beers in there too to sweeten the deal.
Yeah, there's some Busch Light in there.
You guys go in. It's your job. Go in and take care of it. But he puts it instead of doing any of that, he puts it like in a flannel shirt.
It's very 90s.
Very 90s. Yeah.
He puts like 18 ice cubes in this shirt and then like the canisters and like wraps it up.
Yeah.
And he like starts to go up into the exit and he like puts it up there and then out of like the smoke comes walking Brenner and the woman.
His sidekick
lady. Yeah, the woman's sidekick.
Yeah.
And they start fighting, which is watching Skellerich fight is just funny. It's like
he's not a physical actor.
Yeah.
But he's doing it's not like he's just getting his ass kicked too. He's like fighting back, like he's the big action hero, and it's like, you're not an action hero.
No.
But there was a line here they didn't say, because he says like, where's Elvis? And he says, oh, he's been dead from what I hear or something. I'm like, why didn't you say Elvis has left the building?
Yeah.
I've been waiting for that line the whole movie.
I think they did. Did they use it earlier, but in an
inappropriate time. I think they use it twice.
Yeah.
I think they use it twice.
Nonetheless, this was the moment to use it. Right. This was the moment to use it.
This movie both had more Elvis puns than I wanted, and less.
He says something like, Elvis is dead or something.
Elvis is dead. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there was ever a Graceland joke.
No, I kept
waiting for a fat Elvis joke. I was like, Jailhouse Rock is like, you know, I'm like, I mean,
this thing will become a hunk of burning love.
No. Yeah, there was so many that I was like, we're going to get those jokes that we never did. And I don't know that I would have liked them, but you know.
So they fight and because Brenner sees that the stuff is up like on the landing.
Yep.
So they're fighting for it, and I can't remember how the woman. Oh, does
Skeet Ulrich goes full like Nicolas Cage?
Oh, he kicks her in the crotch.
Yeah, he beats
the crap out of her.
He punches her in the face.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she did have a gun to
him. Well, she did. He's defending himself. Yeah. She's a bad guy. She wants to sell this stuff to terrorists.
And then he
knocks her out.
He's the will of Brenner, and then Cuba Gooding stabs Brenner.
Cuba Gooding Jr. like. Because he's got a gun. Brenner's got a gun on Ski Arch, who's on the ground. And then Cuba Gooding Jr. comes up behind Brenner and, like, blows on the back of his head.
Yes, he does.
Instead of just, like, stabbing him, he's, like, blows on the back of his head. So I don't know if that's what Brenner did to him earlier in Andy's or not.
I don't think so.
That was a callback to that. But
I was seeing with the two. I'm like, how was this effective? Right. Like, couldn't he just have basically put a knife into the back of his neck?
Shoved an ice cream sandwich in his mouth? What?
That was a really weird thing.
Yeah.
The more I think about that, in a movie full of weird things, that was really weird.
Yeah, it was.
So Brenner gets stabbed and they get out.
Yeah.
Brenner still has the Elvis.
Yeah.
So they say. They yell. They get out of the thing and they yell to the military, like, seal the tunnel, seal the tunnel. So they blow up the other end of the tunnel, seal it.
Do you know what the funniest shot is? You guys, this is, it's tough because you have to see the whole thing. So they, in theory, in the world of this movie, they have to seal the vent shaft too.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah.
A military guy like throws an explosive down there.
It does not get away.
But he gets a couple of feet away so that when it goes off, he's like, oh!
He was like totally surprised.
That really made me laugh.
No.
So then the Elvis stuff reaches 50 degrees and it goes off and Brenner's face like melts like gruesomely. Yeah. Like
we're talking like
more gruesome than I've seen in a lot of horror movies.
Yeah.
It was like gruesome.
Yeah. Like I said, it was like the Raiders of the Lost Ark
but even more gruesome though, it was pretty gruesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's and then the movie really doesn't know how to end.
Yeah, it was a very awkward ending.
Yeah.
I did laugh though at one point because at one point Cuba Gooding Jr. calls Skeet Ulrich "sweet dick," and you can tell it was ad libbed because Skeet Ulrich's face is like, "What did you just call me?" And then he like stifles a laugh because he realizes like Cuba's still going.
Sweet,
it's so like weird.
I got this from you, sweet dick.
And they go to the military guy. They're like, "Hey, where's our reward?" And he's like, basically, the military guy's like, "Well, your reward is that I won't throw you in prison for knowing secret stuff." And they're like, okay, and then they meet some cute EMTs, and it's like
and it fades
movie over. I don't think we've ever had this happen before. Did either of you go to the Wikipedia page for this movie?
No.
In the plot description, it's a different ending, which I believe there's apparently on the DVD, there's an alternate ending, and I think whoever did the Wikipedia page put in the alternate ending. Maybe they preferred it. I guess in the Wikipedia description, they get out, and the military guy is like, "All right, we'll pay you if you agree to keep quiet." And then the three of them get in a helicopter and fly off.
Then he pushes him into a volcano.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, like, because I had, like, been looking at Wikipedia to find the so wrong it's right question, so I'd kind of seen the ending. So then I'm watching the real movie, and I'm like, wait a minute, this isn't the ending that's on Wikipedia?
He fell asleep halfway through and dreamed that ending.
Yeah.
I wrote the article.
This is a pretty super crazy movie, and I have two. Well, to give a little backstory,
it is a lot like The Net. It is a very late 90s action thriller where it's two characters on the run from shady bad guys. Kurt Russell was in one.
Fair Game.
Fair Game was a Kurt Russell in one where it's like his wife gets kidnapped. Let's go Breakdown. The car breaks down the road. Yep.
Yes. Yeah, that kind of like generic, like terrorist-y. It was like
kind of... it's sort of like the, obviously a horrible example of like the Hitchcock Man on the Run, the mistaken identity, the ordinary Joe who ends up in over his head and bad guys trying to kill him. That was a very common theme in these late 90s thrillers that were all nowhere near as good as a Hitchcock film, but were designed to entertain.
This actually kind of felt a little to me like it's obviously trying to rip off Speed, but had like... It was almost like kind of ripping off Die Hard. And Speed,
yeah, I was gonna say Die Hard a couple times. I thought Die Hard a few times.
Yeah, because like the bad guys plot seems to be like trying to do something with Die Hard, or even like maybe like Die Hard 3 a little bit. It's weird. This is the only movie this director ever directed. It looks like he was basically Ridley Scott's cinematographer and second unit director for years, and then returned to being Ridley Scott's cinematographer and second unit director.
Okay.
I don't think it was, terribly directed or anything. I really didn't.
Well, it was mostly action sequences, and the action set pieces were, as we mentioned before, pretty impressive and satisfactory. Action set pieces.
Yeah. The real flaw, and I think the real probably guilty parties in this movie, story, character, and like the studio who probably pushed through this version, I think everybody who was working on it was like just professionals being like, okay, this is my job. But like the studio probably at some point should have been like, ooh, like this is not good.
I'm skipping ahead to my so bad it's good. I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it.
I really thought it was, the only thing I really hated about it was the bad guy. I thought it was just a generic bad guy and that was boring. But everything, if this movie had taken itself seriously, I think I would have hated it. But since it was some.
It kind of knew what it was.
Yeah, some goofiness to it.
The Cuba Gooding Jr. part, like the movie that Cuba Gooding Jr. is in, is actually kind of a fun, goofy movie.
Yeah, like that stuff was fine.
If I saw it on cable
or something, I'd watch it. Be like, yeah, that's decent. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's the challenge to it is almost like you're right. The villain movie is a bad movie. Yeah. The Cuba Gooding Jr. movie is kind of a fun, goofy movie, and Skeet Ulrich is kind
of weaving it
crossing the corridor between the two. So here we have two so wrong it's right questions. The first one is David Paymer.
Yes.
Who's in this. And he was also in another movie.
I've seen him in a lot of things, but I don't
know. Yeah, he's a working actor.
He was in the Hulk Hogan movie, No Holds Barred.
No Holds Barred, okay, yeah.
All right, David Paymer. David Paymer was nominated for an Oscar, for a supporting actor Oscar. How many years after being nominated for an Oscar was it before David Paymer was in this steaming pile?
I gotta try to remember what movies he's been in.
This movie came out in 99.
I'm gonna try to think about what movies I know David Paymer from.
I feel like saying no.
Oh, wow.
I'm gonna say 10. I'm gonna say a decade.
I guess Jack will take it. It's only 7 years.
7 years.
He was nominated for Mr. Saturday Night, the Billy Crystal stand-up comedy movie. And a mere 7 years later, he was in this. Poor David Paymer.
Well, he's a good actor, a working actor.
He is. Plays a variety of roles. It's true.
Recognizable face.
And he seems to also be doing, like everyone
he's
in this
phoning
movie,
it
he
in.
Is,
he's
kinda... Well, he's kind of doing his best.
What? No.
In, like,
yeah,
he,
there,
there's
that's
a there's
rude.
A professionalism
he is
to him. It's just like they're all professionals in like a crazy movie.
Like they're just like, all right, well, I'm here to do a job. I'll do it. Yeah.
This is the better one. Where some of this movie, I will say this, the desert scenes were filmed in Utah.
Okay.
Where was the, according to Wikipedia, the majority of this film made?
I'm going to say Canada, because that's where a lot of movies are made. Where in Canada? I can't say.
Okay.
Somewhere in Canada.
Okay.
I'll say, just to be different, Tennessee.
Okay. I'm going to give this one to Cody, and I think when I give the answer, the diner scenes are going to make a lot more sense. South Carolina.
South Carolina.
The majority of this movie was made. Suddenly, the Darlene character, as soon as I read that, I'm like, got it. Darlene was a local actor that they brought in.
Probably just the actual owner of that diner.
The diner. The cops were probably local South Carolina actors. Yeah, yeah. Like they probably found a couple of people who had SAG cards, you know, probably. And were like, okay, you're in. That made a lot more sense. So, all right, so we'll go to... Is it so bad it's good? Oh, I'll let Cody kind of... You were kind of saying it. So you're kind of... It sounds like
I don't
you're
think
saying...
It was that, I just don't think it was that bad. I mean, you know, it's fun to talk about. It was fun, you know... I mean, there were some eye roll moments, but I thought... honestly, it was probably Cuba Gooding Jr. that saved the movie. If he wasn't in it, it would have been just kind of bland and boring. But his character, for me, kept it together a bit. And so I wouldn't say so bad it's good because I don't think it was that bad.
I'm kind of with you. I had kind of a fun time watching it. I think if you're a product of the 90s... You also have a much higher chance of liking this film.
Yeah.
It's real dumb, but it's sort of fun.
It knows it's dumb though. It's not like trying.
Well,
to be.
Like the Cuba Gooding Jr. like kind of stuff knows it's dumb.
Yeah.
And like there's a it's what I'm trying to think of another film. We watched another film that had this sort of like vague professionalism and also had a sense of fun to it from this era. But it was dumber than I thought it would be, but it was also actually more fun to watch than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And it actually really kind of made me miss that, like, Cuba Gooding Jr. probably didn't get more bites at the apple in Hollywood because I think he can be very funny, and I think he actually had, if they had cleaned up the movie.
I just saw him on like The View or something the other day too.
Yeah, he's still around, but like, yeah, not as...
He must have some news project.
He got attached to a couple of real stinkers.
Well,
that dog sled movie, that boat trip movie.
Yeah.
I don't know Cuba Gooding Jr., but I'm guessing like Jerry Maguire was both the best and worst thing to happen to him, because I think that people just started seeing him as that character
instead of him as an actor.
Instead of him. I mean, it was like when
I
you watch
like
him,
whenever I see him, though,
he's great.
Oh, yeah, he's not bad
he's
at
great.
All.
Yeah, no. You see him in like Boys in the Hood too, and you're like, he's fantastic in that. And So, all right, Jack, your call. So
same thing. I agree with you guys. I don't think it's bad. It's just sort of a product of its time.
Yeah,
you know, it's not perfect. It's not perfect. It has flaws. It felt a little bit rushed at times, and I wonder if they just like cut a bunch of stuff out.
Yeah,
for unnecessary stuff. But it also seemed like a vehicle. You know, like, oh God, this Cuba Gooding is going to be huge because he just won this award, and this Skeet Ulrich, you know, the girls think he's really cute. So let's get him in a movie.
Scream is making a gazillion dollars.
You know,
He's in Scream, right?
Yeah, he is.
One of the killers.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert
for that 22-year-old
movie.
Hey, if you've never seen it before, it's a new movie.
That's well, I would be fascinated to watch this movie with like a millennial, because I feel like that's millennials would go crazy with like the cell phone inconsistency and like you know, where it's a world where clearly cell phones and like data exist, but no character seems to use it properly.
Right.
And
wasn't as top of mind back then, I guess.
Wasn't as current. I do remember back in the day with the TV station I used to work at, they did a movie review, and they used to like to bring in people to review movies that had like a weird relevancy to it. And they brought on an ice cream truck driver and had an ice cream truck driver review this movie. I always remember it for that. And it was like very funny. He had some thoughts about having a chemical weapon in the back of an ice cream truck.
There you go.
I think that does it for this one. I feel like can we tease the movie that we were talking about? I feel like we can.
I mean, we're gonna do it because
we're gonna do it, and we actually have physical copies of it, so we don't have to worry about. All right, so coming up, it may not be our next episode, but within the next two episodes, we will finally get to what might be the worst James Bond film.
I disagree, but.
That's a very subjective category, but A View to a Kill.
I think we're going to have arguments about that.
I know. It may
Jack
not
hates
be.
View to a Kill.
I hate it.
I don't mind it. I mean, it's a terrible movie, but but I like it better.
I have no independent recollections of it, so I'm coming in with a clean mind.
Yeah, it's not a very memorable
movie. No, it's not.
We'll have to see how I put it up
again. Roger Moore stays on for one more.
That's right. What is the one that I think, of the ones that we've done, is it Moonraker that I think is the worst one? I can't even remember.
Well, no, Moonraker we had, Octopussy was bad.
Oh, you're right. Oh, yeah.
Moonraker I say is the one that should be bad, but I can't hate it. I can't explain it.
Die Another Day is my least favorite.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're right. Oh, that's I'm sorry. You know what?
Surfing the big wave.
View to a Kill may come in second behind that. But yeah, View to a Kill is coming up. We actually have physical DVDs, yes. So we know there's nothing.
I even have my own copy.
Yeah, they can't stop us now.
Yeah.
Or coming up very soon. Maybe one before that. We'll see. We'll see how things fall out. The rare chance we get to preview an episode and know that we will... and know it will be an episode. I think that does it. We will, if you guys have anything else we want to, yeah.
No?
Yeah. We will see you back here next time. Bye.